Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the January 26th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. I've been traveling this week and the last couple of weeks with the Farm Credit folks all across the state. This program comes to you from Prentice. Thanks to Beard Implement for hosting us today. Let's start with this question to you, Brian Stark. We've had some numbers that have come out this week as it relates to agricultural acreage in the United States. Can you tell me a little bit about those numbers and what you're thinking we might be using going forward?
Yeah, Informa recently put out some of their guesstimates here for the March 31st acreage report, and I believe corn was around 90.5 million acres and beans similar at 90. And I think that acreage pie between corn and soybeans is what we would say is pretty accurate. I think we would differ slightly in the breakout. I think with Dease corn 17, that is, trading in the 390 to 395 area, in the heart of the corn belt, it's going to be less enticing to switch to soybeans. And I think given that, we're using somewhere around 92 million acres of corn and maybe 88 million acres of beans. The biggest thing I think the trade hasn't really grasped, though, is we've talked a lot about acreage switching back and forth. Is corn going to be down 4 million? Are beans going to be up 4 million? But we have this little caveat of winter wheat acres down 3.7 million acres, and I think that points to still a defensive posture in new crop beans moving forward.
And we talked about a defensive posture a couple of times over the last week. Ellen Dearden, you have some ideas about the cycles in the marketplace for soybeans. Where do you think these are headed?
Well, the soybean cycles really point to some lows in January and then some bigger lows toward the end of February or early March. And that says to me that the bean market's probably going to stall out. And it may be that corn stays steady and beans fall, some combination of that. But it looks to me like the beans have some more downside risk at this stage of the game. The other thing that I noticed is there's a big fat head and shoulders top on the soybean oil chart. And that doesn't bode well. You need both products to rally in order to support the beans. Meal's trying to do it, but it can't do it all without bean oil helping a little too. So I think we've got some downside risk in the beans, particularly over the next month's time.
Dale Durkles, I know you can talk a little bit about the cycle, some about the fundamentals. You can throw this in, but most of the analysts we've had on the air over the last month or so have urged producers to go ahead and make a new crop soybean sale of some kind when they get to the levels that are on the top end of the marketplace. They're at those points now. Are you in that camp?
You know, I hear about a week ago I was starting to see the effects that the news about the Argentine flooding was starting to get exhausted, and that had to come from some of the estimates that were starting to flow in to me getting exaggerated. And so, yeah, you know, it looked to me the bean market's gotten a little bit lofty up in here. I think we're going to be due for some weakness. My cycle works pretty much in line with what Ellie talked about. But, you know, when I look at the beans, I tell people, you know, hey, take a look at covering 15% of the new crop, basically acknowledging I'm going to cover for most people their non-insured bushels.
Right. So if they're taking crop insurance, 15% at 85% coverage, they've got that covered. And you're still going to pull the trigger today if they haven't done it already?
You know, I'd still do it to where we're sitting here ended today above 1020. You know, the high side we had in the November contract here was right at 1040 or just above it here about a week ago. So I don't think the market's really slipped enough at this point that I would avoid making any sales right now. And, you know, when you look ahead, Ellie was talking about cycles, and what a lot of people have tended to forget about here, at least for the short term, we're really starting to harvest what arguably is going to be a huge soybean crop here over the next number of months. When you look at Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, you know, we're somewhere in excess of 6 billion bushel crop getting ready to come to market. So you got to put that in your picture window here at this juncture and think, you know, things are going to have a hard time moving uphill for the short term.
Ellen Dearden, you'd like to discuss the timing of sales, I know for sure. Are you thinking that sales need to be made now, or are there other opportunities that you're looking forward to in the future?
No, I'm pushing sales. I've even pushed sales a little bit beyond this 15%. And I have a number of guys that I work with in the Western Corn Belt, Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, who are going to increase bean acres considerably. So I have really pushed them to price production on those increased acres as well.
Brian Stark, because you're an elevator manager there at the Andersons in Champaign, have you been purchasing new crop soybeans?
We have. That's the biggest push we've seen in the last 30 to 60 days. When November bean futures were over 10, I think guys started to ease into it. Now we've been looking for the next 15 to 20% when they go up to a third of maybe 17's production, covering with some sort of minimum price strategy, whether it's a put call spread somewhere in that area to protect the next percentage of sales on the downside, but leave some upside moving forward. And no one's really interested today in moving new crop corn. And the old adage we've said for years is, if you're going to bet on a commodity, bet on one and not the on both. So I think they've made the right decision. That's what we've encouraged them to do, and they've executed.
South America, Dale Durkles, this has been on your list for a while. What do we know about the damage that's actually taken place in Argentina? You said it's probably been built into the marketplace at this point. Will it come back to roost?
It could, because it's still real early. We just got done planting the bean crop here in Argentina in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, the crop is still small, still emerging. There's a lot we don't know about it. There were numbers out of the Ag Ministry down there today suggesting that acreage losses are only going to be something just short of 700,000 in terms of beans, and a little bit over 100,000. Those are hectares. So, you know, those aren't near the numbers that were talked about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, certainly. And, you know, that says that, you know, things probably got a little bit overdone. The other thing that really is an odd twist, when you go up into to more northern areas where they had the flooding just 6 months ago when they were harvesting a crop, we've got a lot of fields up in there that probably aren't going to get planted either. So it's going to be a learning process going forward. But, you know, what are we going to talk about? A lot of people are around 52 million ton for a crop down there right now, give or take. Maybe we go down to 50, probably, and not a lot less, unless they'd have a severe drought here during their growing season. But when you move up to Brazil, you know, things look really pretty good at this juncture, and you're talking, you know, 103 million ton crop or something pretty close to that is reasonably secure. And, you know, we're probably getting 15-18% into the harvest in the state of Mato Grosso as it is right now. So, you know, as a whole, it's still a big crop, not one that the market's going to have trouble absorbing. A crop of that size, yeah, it may mean that, you know, as we go into the gut slot of their harvest, that we're going to see a bit softer markets, like the cycles Ellen talked about, implying that we got lower prices ahead. But I don't see a huge collapse either.
Let's switch over to corn. I want to come back to you, Brian Stark. When I talked to the Andersons Climbers facility, they were 7 over on Wednesday. Tell me about basis and old crop corn. They began to move some old crop corn into that ethanol plant at those prices.
Yeah, I think basis is having to do some of the work, but I also believe that the upper end of the range of March corn that's been locked in a 20-25 cent range for the better part of 90 to 100 days has encouraged some producers selling, not basically based on price, but simply based on timing of cash flow needs. We know a lot of bills come due around March 1st, and with the upper end of the range being tested and not a lot of new fundamental information willing to break us out of that range, at least for the present time, I think the growers taking advantage of that, and the basis certainly helps. We've had a mixed bag where the basis will peak up in certain periods of time. They'll buy their needs and then they'll fade back. back. So over at our ethanol plant in Clymers that you referenced, they had just a week ago faded to option price the March. Now they're back 7 over. So it varies, and I think we've seen a lot of choppy action when it comes to the cash bid at the processor level here the last 30 days.
Hey, Alan Dearden, I want to talk about this maybe as a teachable moment, because what he told me was that producers really didn't want to make a corn sale, but they needed to make a sale for cash flow purposes. I suspect when you talk to producers, you talk to them about markets and risk management. Is this one of those things that you think about when cash sales need to be made, or more importantly, when cash flow needs to be had and how you put it into a marketing plan?
Yeah, I think so. And the fact that I have a cycle low in corn coming sometime next week. So I'd really like to avoid that. And we made a few light cash sales last week. I can't get guys in the Western Corn Belt, where the basis is really horrible, to let loose of a bushel of corn. So the cash flow came from putting corn under loan. I mean, we haven't talked about putting corn under loan for how long, and yet the Western Corn Belt's pretty active there.
What does that mean in the grand scheme of the marketplace, do you think?
It just locks it away, and guys will forget about it until they think they get pushed to repay that loan. And if they're putting it under loan right now, that repaying that loan doesn't come till harvest next year. Again, it's going to be a horrible basis time for most of those growers. Not a real good play, but can't force guys to make sales at 35 or 40 cents under versus what Brian was talking at 7 over.
Well, you know, all for the last number of months, because the bean market has arguably been high relative to the corn, farmers have really, in meeting their cash needs, have been much more willing to market beans and step back and hold on to the corn. And I think that pattern's continuing, but we're getting to a juncture now where, you know, that there are a lot of people don't have any more beans to sell. So it's becoming an issue. Okay, if I have more cash flow needs at this point, which they're getting ready to cycle into another round of that, you know, how do I merchandise market my corn to meet those needs? As Alan said, you know, some people are choosing to go to the loan. We got some people in some places, depending upon what kind of offer it is, using basis contracts, which allows them to move, still keeps futures pricing open at this particular point, but also returns some cash up front. So they're doing a variety of things. And, you know, as long as the market stumbles along like it is at this point, whether it, you know, if it doesn't rally a lot or break a whole lot, I think farmers are just going to meter stuff out as they need cash, and we're never going to see a big push come to market.
Two things I'd say on the corn is there's a vast difference between the Eastern Corn Belt and the Western Corn Belt as far as basis goes, and I think we have seen that in any kind of marketing plan. We talk about in the Eastern Corn Belt that the beans are all gone. Farmers basically are sold out of beans. I have guys in the Western Corn Belt that have 90 cent under basis on beans. They're not moving beans either. So, you know, we've got a completely different situation when you get, say, west of Des Moines.
We know that this is a big crop for both corn and soybeans, so the carryovers expected by USDA at the end of the year are really large, so they have dropped back, at least in that January report. We'll know more again when the WASDE report numbers are released in February. Does the amount of carryover that we have left bother you very much, Brian Stark?
It bothers me for one thing, because I think the market has a disconnect. Let's talk about soybeans for a minute. 420 million projected carryout, yet we have a July-November inverse of 40-some cents. So either one of two things, either to go back to Ellen's point of the Western bean basis being so cheap, either that has to improve because our carryout really is going to be tighter than that when we get to August 31st, or market's going to have to pay someone to carry 400 million beans in a new crop. So there's a disconnect between the cash market and what the futures market's telling us between those. And I think that's where I have a little bit of an issue with the projected carryout. And I think the market in itself on beans specifically has been burnt 2 years in a row, where we've come out of harvest, thinking that we've got a 400 to 500 million bushel carryout, only to get to September 1 and it's closer to 200 million. So I think that's part of the reason, but there's a disconnect between the cash and the futures carry between the two crops right now.
Yeah, at 420 million bushels, when you said somebody's going to need to be paid to carry that in, carry that over, what do you mean?
Well, one point in time, if you look out in the carries, I mean, we've seen as good a carries in beans in the futures market since pre-ethanol days of 2006. We haven't seen them in a long time, and it's rivaling, I would argue, even some carry potentially in the forwards in wheat, given some of the dynamics we've been seeing on the cash side. So what I mean by paying, I think at some point, you know, no one's going to be incented, at least from a commercial perspective. I can't speak to the producer level on how they manage their storage space specifically. But from my end, you know, if we're looking at a 40 cent inverse, we're certainly not going to carry beans through that inverse into new crop. So something has to change. The futures market has to give us incentive to carry beans forward.
How would it do that, Dale Durkles?
Well, a lot of that can be accommodated with the way people structure their basis bids as we get into late spring, especially going on into summer. You know, they'll figure out different ways to do it to stimulate producers to move it and make it, you know, viable for them to carry it forward. But, you know, the one thing everybody, you know, tends to forget when they look at the bean complex, and I don't know that the numbers themselves are going to get a lot better as far as demand numbers like they have the last two to four years in the beans, but I think everybody is really remiss in not understanding that we have an extremely big, an extremely robust demand base underneath the beans, not just here in the U.S., but around the world in total. And that isn't going to change, I don't see, when I start to see signs that world economic growth is going to hold stable and probably get a little bit better. So that means, you know, demand for the protein is going to be pretty good.
Are you neglecting the Trump effect?
Well, the Trump effect I see as being somewhat of a positive, at least from the aspect of when you start talking about an infrastructure building program, that's base demand for hard commodities. When you look at trying to take regulations off of business, that helps invigorate business activity. When you look at tax cuts, you know, people have more money to spend. So, you know, I don't see any negatives there. You got some conflict and some issues with some other world leaders, as we found out today with the Mexican president canceling his meeting with Trump, but I see those as really being all short term. Meanwhile, you see China that's continuing to grow at a 6.5% clip. We're starting to see some inflation take root over in Europe of all places and seeing some growth signals there. So, you know, worldwide economic activity to me is a neutral at worst and a slight positive at best.
Yeah, I'm worried if NAFTA gets scuttled completely, but I don't believe that's what's going to happen. I think there will be some renegotiations. But keep in mind that NAFTA was signed in 1994, and think of all the things that have changed from an intellectual property standpoint into 2016-17. So I think that even though it's a scary proposition to think that thing could be killed completely, I don't believe that's going to be the case. Now, lack of signing the TPP didn't seem to be a big surprise. I think it's somewhat of a disappointment, but it's not a big surprise. We were already headed in that direction.
I don't disagree with anything of what Ellen or Dale has said so far. I think the biggest thing for the market is uncertainty. So as we get more paths solidified of what President Trump is wanting to do on the trade side, I think we'll have a better picture. But right now, I think that's what's kind of caused some of the volatility.
All right. So where do we stand? Let's come back to this again. Thinking about old crop and new crop, soybeans to begin with, and then we'll come back to corn. From the South American perspective, a very large crop coming out of Brazil, already in the harvest mode, something, as you mentioned, Dale, around 15 to 18% maybe, expectations from USDA at 104 million metric tons. From Argentina, USDA currently at 57 million metric tons. That was prior, I think, to all of the rainfall, the flooding that slowed things down. Their harvest won't start there until April and runs through June. So it kind of gives you a timing on what that looks like. Given old and new crop soybean sales, where do each of you stand? Just for clarification, and we'll start with you, Ellen Dearden.
Old crop beans, I am completely cashed out. I see no reason, in, particularly in the eastern Corn Belt, to be holding a bushel of old crop beans. New crop beans, I want to sell increased acreage. I want to sell about 10-15% of total beans, but more if you're increasing acreage. Current level.
Brian Stark?
I would say I would agree with Ellen. I would not be handling or hanging on to any old beans other than some gambling stocks at this stage of the game. I'm a little more aggressive with a minimum price type strategy, getting up to 30 to 40% of expected production in beans, given some acreage increased concern that we have.
Dale Durkles.
Well, I'm roughly about 25-30% of the old crop beans left, and as I said, I've priced about 15% of the new ones at this point. And I think for now I'm going to stand pat. I know that the market's going to weaken into lows here, like Ellen was talking about, middle to late February, maybe early March. I see some opportunities beyond that at this point.
So really everybody's already positioned, simply waiting to see what happens in February for the crop insurance, and you'll make decisions after that for new crop. Is that roughly speaking where you all stand?
I guess that's what you could call it.
Well, that's what I called it, I suppose. Do you have another short-term summary of what that looks like? How about on corn, Dale Durkles?
You know, back onto the beans, you know, you mentioned, I don't worry so much about the crop insurance at this point in time. That price will be what it is. I've got a spreadsheet that has the four major exporters of beans, three in South America, and ourselves in it, and I plugged in 4 million more acres of beans, trendline yield, which mine's aggressive at 48.5. And do you know that a year from March, bean supplies before we harvest the 18 South American crop might actually be a little tighter? That shocks people when they look at that.
Wait, how do you do that? Is demand just that good?
Demand in the first half of the marketing year, export demand for beans and products, I basically look at whole beans and crush, but demand in the first half of, quote-unquote, our marketing year for ourselves and the South Americans, on average, has gone up about 4%. I only plugged in a 2% increase.
So you're really beginning to build a demand picture that continues what we've seen over the last several years.
$10 beans are not high-priced beans. Think about it. You know, when we had bean prices and corn prices rally in 07, 08, we basically increased the value of beans by a factor, and I'm just using the ballpark, of 1.5. Corn, we actually doubled. So if I look at a $10 bean today, I'm basically in days of yore in the 70s, 80s, 90s, thinking about a 660 bean. Is that a high-priced bean? Does that really hurt demand? It doesn't. You know, people forget to step back and look at things in a relative sense to where prices on a bigger perspective are, and I think that's where a lot of people get caught. You know, and so I look at a $10 bean, and frankly, look at where we're at and what kind of demand we're seeing. Demand is not weak for beans, nor products.
But again, you're talking 18 months out, not 6 months out, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Well, demand just in general right now is not bad, you know, but when you look out in the long haul, I don't see it changing a whole lot.
All right. Now your corn numbers, old crop and new crop.
Old crop on corn, I'm probably holding a little bit more, but I think the market's going to have some energy again or some price cycles that fit into it, and I'm waiting for the 40-week cycle to really give me a low. And if you look back at the history of the corn market, for whatever reason, when we get a 40-week low behind us, we have a really good rally in corn prices. So I'm basically sitting here playing some patience. Meanwhile, I see it chopping sideways. I'm about 40% sold at this point. New crop have sold none. Not in a hurry to sell any.
Ellen Dearden?
I kind of would agree with the new crop. We haven't been sellers. We've been option players a little bit there, and I will say we are trying to be extremely flexible. I've got protection on corn, and we about 50% cash sold, but I've been short these the July corn futures, and had lifted those, and I'm looking to put those back on. Back out in the $4 range. We've also been long some 360 July calls against 420 July calls sold. So that's been a way to look at this market for the 50% that we'd already cash sold.
And Brian Stark, and then when you've given those numbers, Brian, can you talk a little bit about the RFS policies? Maybe more importantly about what the ethanol market looks like, what the RINs market's telling us at this point?
Sure. Real quick, I guess from a old crop corn perspective, most guys are probably in the 40 to 50% sold range, not really urging or having patience moving forward until we see an opportunity past the acreage report. New crop, I agree with Ellen and Dale. Not much has been done, and I'm good with that. I think we've kind of focused on betting on corn and being patient there and moving beans. To ethanol, I think a lot of uncertainty, obviously, with President Trump's pulling back on some regulations with an executive order. And ultimately, I don't think from a infrastructure standpoint that the RFS is going to be drastically changed. I think, again, the RIN market trading the last few days has been based on uncertainty. I don't get any sense that the new EPA director is willing or going to go down the road of changing it. And for us, I think, you know, margins are pretty good right now, but you look out into the quarter 4 of 17, and they're not quite as good. And obviously the spot market is kind of when people have been living in. So I don't expect many changes moving forward, I guess, is what I'm trying to summarize.
Let's get our final thoughts for the day. We'll start with you, Dale Dirkles.
You know, the one thing I think a lot of people don't appreciate, and I still see it, investment money wants to own commodities. I started talking about this a year ago, how we were getting positioned to do it. We had commodity indices rally hard through 2016. We consolidated over the last 4 to 6 months, and I think we're getting just positioned to have another leg up in those.
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
The crude oil market looks overheated to me. We've been in about a $3.50 trading range for 6 weeks. We were on the high side of things this week, up over $54 a barrel. The market shows speculative long positions in the crude market at the same record levels that we saw the middle of last summer.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I'm going to tag on to Dale's a little bit and say that I agree with the Dow making a record high of 20,000 points, and the fact that commodities are overall historically cheaper, I think that's one of the avenues that we may see move back in, especially with President Trump talking negatively towards the dollar. So I think we need to be mindful of that moving forward. The acreage report is huge, and obviously February is a very important month for risk management with the establishment of our crop insurance guarantee.
Our thanks, of course, to our panelists. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. We were joined this week by Ellen Dearden at AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dale Dirkles from AgriVisor LLC in Bloomington, Illinois, and from Champaign, Illinois, and the Andersons, Brian Stark. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.